The River of Souls, written by Robert R. McCammon and read by Eduardo Ballerini.
1. A Constant Player. Chapter 1. The man was as big as a mountain. His shoulders were like boulders perched upon cliffs. His face was a sun-browned patch of flesh above a wild growth of jet-black beard that hung halfway down a tobacco-stained shirt. In deference to the room, he had removed his battered gray tricorn. His black hair was a bare, greased mop of a madman's mane. From it issued a stink of dead ursines, and therefore had attracted the half-dozen big green flies that flitted and swooned about his glistening zenith. A moment after he had come through the curtains from the garden beyond, where the lights glowed in candle pots and cicadas chirred sweetly in the pear trees, the music that charged the dancing ceased. Violin, cello, harpsichord, and clacker of the clacksticks stopped their rotes and rhythms, and thus the dancers upon the shining plank floor in the candlelit chamber also stopped their series of roundabouts. All eyes turned toward the massive black-garbed man who had just stomped his hard, dirty boots upon the selfsame planks. And those who knew what was likely to happen drew breath to whisper and point. They pointed toward a young man named Matthew Corbett, who stood nearly at the center of the room next to the most beautiful woman who had ever lived. The mountain of a man gazed across the room in the flickering candlelight. From the ceiling hung streamers of red and white paper. Nearby was a long table upon which were placed the victuals of the evening. Two roasted turkeys stuffed with oyster dressing, a roasted pig stuffed with mushrooms and bacon, grilled grouper and sea bass stuffed with crab meat, and sundry potatoes stuffed with a variety of vegetables, sweetmeats, and pickles. Platters held bottles of French wine and jugs of Carolina ale. Glasses sparkled. The music had been light and lively, the conversations keen and witty, and the dancers high-stepping and precise in their turns. All in all, it had been an excellently festive party. Until this black-bearded, ebon-haired bull of the woods had just clomped in through the filmy curtains. And now, in the absence of music and with the whispers dying down, there was only the noise of the flies buzzing hungrily around the gleaming, smelly curls of matted hair.
"Oh, no," said the most beautiful woman, who stood grasping Matthew's arm on the right, and again, as if to ward the beast away, "Oh, no!"
The beast, however, just grunted with the sound of a horse team breaking wind. His iron-gray eyes had found the prize. Matthew sensed the beautiful woman's distress and touched her arm reassuringly.
"There, it's all right," he said,
resplendent in his wine-red suit and white shirt with a high collar and a frothy fronting of Spanish lace.
Who is he?"
She whispered in his direction, without taking her gorgeous and luminous violet eyes from the visage of impending violence.
"He's the man who's going to kill you."
"What, say?" asked Matthew. He thought she'd said something he'd rather not have heard. The monstrous mountain moved, and in so moving caused the throng of frozen dancers to by necessity thaw their legs and scurry out of the way. The boots pounded the planks like a drumbeat for the dead. The musicians, though they were safely upon a stage, drew back for the sake of further safety against a wall upon which hung a tapestry of the dual masks of comedy and tragedy, as the stage was normally used by the stalwart Charlestown players. The boot-pound drumbeats continued across the floor, step by ominous step, until the new arrival at the party stood looming over Matthew Corbett.
"Not again,"
said Pandora Prisket, her red-lipped mouth twisting. The violet eyes in her heart-shaped face flashed with both anger and supplication.
"Please, I'm begging you."
The man shook his head as absolutely as a demon on doomsday.
"No use begging," he answered,
in a voice as deep as the pit and as rough as a rocky road.
"What's got to be done?"